where we will speak on Unitarian Universalist spirituality in the 21st century.
A small topic. And I'm not sure what Tony was doing when he gave me this, but it's called Non-Drowsy Church. So, come to church and get speed, I suspect. Well, I have been smitten. I have been infatuated, and my guess is it will turn into long-term maturity, I hope. And during our book club reading, we are reading the book by Lucia Chavola Birnbaum, and it's called The Dark Mother, African Origins, and Godmothers. And I'll have that book up there for you to read it. We'll discuss the first Sunday of every month we have the book reading. And the reason that I'm taken by that is that, as we talked about last time I was here, the possibility through archaeological findings and reason and sound thinking, but not without debate, but nonetheless sound thinking, that there was a unified belief system 20,000 BCE. And that unified belief system was represented in symbols of statues of Venus. They're like your 6-inch statues. And these statues were found along the migration routes out of Africa to the Pyrenees Mountains to Siberia. And that's when I started questioning, probably from a patriarchal perspective, what the dolls had to do with it. You know, and then I got to thinking, is it possible that these things actually symbolize a unified belief system that covered that distance and that amount of people? Today we would call it an international religion, a religion that spanned nations. And I got to thinking in our own culture, well, G.I. Joe soldiers, they do represent a unified belief system in our country. Barbie dolls, Ken dolls, we have all kinds of symbols. We have grieving many people from New England with their New England statues of Tom Brady in our country, and celebrators of Eli Manning as they represent unified belief systems. So, and the more I read in this area, the more I am convinced that there was this unified belief system that existed pre-patriarchy. Now, when we try to define patriarchy, you know, it's a word, and you look at the definition, and it talks about male dominance and boy dominance, and you know, and I've kind of got that in my head and try to understand that as best I can. But now I have something to contrast patriarchy through history, which I didn't have before. I have this unified belief system that's marked by transformation, by justice, by peace, by mindfulness of the other. And then as I'm interpreting world history as I know it, an example of this happening to me before, and that I've shared it here, when I was studying the U.S. history of corporations and try to understand the relationship between corporations, the U.S. government, and citizenships, and that triangle of U.S. corporations and our government and citizens. And I was trying to understand that and discovered from looking at history factually that the founding of our country was as much a corporate enterprise as it was a delightful exploration and search for freedom. That corporations sponsored the discovery of America looking for resources and such. So, what that did for me is I realized to understand U.S. history, I had to view U.S. history through the triangle of corporations, government, and citizens. And that each historical event I had to ask, what did this event mean for citizens? What did this event mean for corporations? What did this event mean for our government? And that way I would get a true understanding of the dominant forces in our culture. And it revolutionized my thinking, because I had to think of the Civil War in terms of corporations, people, and government. And I had to think of World War I in terms of that, World War II in terms of that, the suffrage movement in terms of that. Every historical event that I knew of, I had to go back and reinterpret. And now I'm finding myself in the same position. The triangle of patriarchy, the mother, the great mother, with the value system of compassion, justice, and transformation, and we as human beings, either delighting in or suffering in the value system of mother, patriarchy, and we as human beings. So now I have to move through history with that new triangle and trying to understand. And so what comes to my mind, when I grew up, we had a television. Where I grew up in Baltimore, I think we had like four channels. Fuzzy, hazy, we can get the Washington Channel in Baltimore, and those kind of things. So then they had the Twilight movie, so they always had a movie. And so I would get to watch these movies, and these movies were war movies. Earl Flynn, Charge of the Light Brigade. I don't know how many of you have seen that, where the 500 charged to their death, right? Well, you know, I'm thinking that's glory. Go sacrifice your life, charge into that, right? But for no other reason but glory. Certain death, just charge in there, right? And all kind of John Wayne war movies and the glory of war movies and those kind of things. I did not know I was being indoctrinated to glorify patriarchy. I did not know that. I did not know that the value systems of a war culture were being internalized within me with positive feelings, with a positive affect deep in my being from the time I was a child to my struggle today. I don't know how many of you remember the models He-Man and Skeletor, classic good and evil, right? My son, I think, was 3 or so, and I bought him those. And I tried to get Skeletor, my son was He-Man, naturally, the hero. I tried to get Skeletor to go to He-Man and have a reconciliation. I was in seminary at the time, and you know, and I was kind of, and he was 3, and he was having none of it. These were enemies. There was a dualism. There is good and there is evil, and He-Man is good, and Skeletor is evil. Even though his wonderful, loving father was doing the manipulation, I could not win. There was just none of that. So by that age, his internalized mind already had this dualism of good and evil. And then as I started turning the cartoons on, I started looking, going, there it is. There's a value system being internalized by my son. So now I have to take the best I can understand world history events. Alexander the Great was a war culture that slaughtered innocent people. The Great Roman Empire was a war culture that enslaved people. The first slavery came about, according to this reading, and we can debate that and gather more support and information and all that kind of stuff. The first slavery came when a group of people conquered another group of people, killed all the men, because you couldn't sleep at night with all the men running around, and took the women and children. Then during the Bronze Age, we created what? We created chains. We could chain the men up at night. So now we didn't have to kill the men, because we could chain them up at night and be safe. So now from that triangle of the mother, patriarchy, and it's not male-female. It's not man-woman. It's value systems.
is what we're talking about here. Value systems. Now I have to look at that, and as this value system that glorifies war, slavery, and all that goes with it, is in contest with this other value system of peace and justice and love, which does not stand a chance militarily against this value system.
All the great empires that brought us civilization and glory. I don't know how to think outside of patriarchy. How do I get out of it? But now I have a hope that I can travel through time and bring life to my imagination, and I can take that step back in time where patriarchy did not exist. And I can get a feel for what it was like to live among people where violence was not a primary value. I walk down the street pretty regularly up to the pond at my house, and where I walk, there's no sidewalk. And it's true. Now, however we want to interpret this truth, you can interpret it. But when I'm walking, when there are women drivers, they'll move around if there's no other cars coming, which usually I hear and I go off. But if they can move around, sometimes I'm at my, you know, I'm in my ritual pace, so I don't want to be disrupted too much. Some men will move around. Some men won't move at all. Some men get a little closer. What is that? What kind of aggression is that? Sometimes, when they get a little closer, I'm confessing how crazy I am. I'll lean. Like, is that insane or what? And every time you work on a car, you are confronted that your bones and flesh are not as hard as that metal. How many of you work on cars and come away with bleeding knuckles and stuff? I mean, we have to learn that lesson over and over again, and we do learn that lesson over and over again. Yet, to shift our worldview is a major undertaking. First, I have to have some sense that history has value. Or why do it? So what? So what, this is true? Why do it? I have to have some sense that culture and the values of culture moves through time. And there's vehicles of moving those values from generation to generation to generation. And when I'm in a culture, especially a culture that is closed, how am I supposed to know there is anything other than the culture I'm living in? Where do we get that information from? So my mind is attached to Earl Flynn and the charge of the Life Brigade with my Olympic brain, all that it is, bypassing thinking, meaning-making, reflective processing, that Olympic brain, all that it is, with positive affect and joy and glory, I've got an image of a group of men charging to their death in glory and sacrificing their life for country. That's in me. Now I'm wrestling with a belief system and a value system that points at that and says, that's insane. What are you doing? What are you doing? How many of your nation's resources did it take to make the swords, breed the horses, make the saddles, make the buttons of the uniforms? How many people back home are going hungry so these 500 can have the material they need? Was it 600?
Yes, sir.
600.
See how truth travels?
So, and we read
from our religion, from our religious faith traditions, that we honor as Unitarian Universalists, we read that transformation takes place in our inner world. We read from the Christian tradition, the Apostle Paul, one who, before experiencing Jesus in a bright light on the road to Damascus for his conversion experience, and then spent 10 to 14 years trying to understand what happened to him before he wrote anything, the Apostle Paul, who put people in chains, had people killed, Christians particularly, at that point in time, after his conversion, after 10 years of trying to figure out what happened to him and who he was as a human being, having that conversion experience, he writes this about the inner world. That God would grant you, according to God's riches and God's glory, to be strengthened, that you might through the Spirit in the inner person, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with the saints what is the width, the length, and the depth, and the height, to know full love, which passes all knowledge. So now I know, wherever I am on the theology of that, if I'm going to take the truth out of that, the truth that I take out of that is that my inner world can be weak or strong. And that there is a process of strengthening my inner world, and there are processes in which I can weaken my inner world. That's what I learned from that. From the prophet Jesus, the first century prophet Jesus, asked about the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is within you. Again, a point to the inner world. In the Buddhist tradition, we talked about last time I was here that when Siddhartha first left his home and first went into the forest and met his teacher, the first thing he was taught was you have to learn how to breathe so you can concentrate. So you have to learn how to breathe in order to move into your inner world, to concentrate, to begin to do the work you're going to do if you're going to follow a spiritual path. And then the teacher teaches him to let go of the past and the future. And I'm thinking, that's the end result of spirituality. But in the Buddhist tradition, that's the beginning. That's the beginning. And then they say more about the inner world, that your heart is to be like a still lake on a windless day. And then they talk about the realm of the limitless space and the illusionary nature of all phenomena, and that your imagination is the artist that creates all reality. Now, I'm not saying I fully understand all of what's being said, except that it occurs in the inner world. It occurs within us. And then we have the teachings from Mahatma Gandhi about detachment and attachment, and that our attachment to external objects actually means we have that object symbolized in our mind, and we're attached to that object within our mind as well as the external object. He says something very fascinating with this attachment and the spirit of detachment that would mark mature spirituality. He says that a mark of spiritual maturity with this spirit of detachment is that we are to detach from the desired fruit of our labor. So that means I preach without expectation of pay. That's what that means. That means I go to work and I don't think about what I'm going to buy with the money I'm going to make. That's what that means. That means that I'm detached from the future and any anticipation of the future,
and I can stand in the here and now. What does that have to do with me shifting my worldview to interpret my understanding and my reading of world history from the triangle of patriarchy, mother, and people? I know that if I just do that headwise, I'm not really doing it. I'm not doing it. We've talked many times in here before about having empathy for ourselves as we look at our own history and the traumas and the hurts we've experienced in our own history, that the way of healing, the way of reclaiming our full selves, is to, in a sense, travel through time with a sense of empathy and step into our own history and nurture that woundedness within us. Just not know it's a good thing to do, just not saying, yeah, it's the right thing to do, but actually doing it and feeling it, having the direct experience of it. But now, I've got this idea in my head of the violence and the trauma and the nature of patriarchy, in contrast to a unified belief system compassion and love, justice and transformation, and going to interpret that in light of humankind as best I can. My spiritual and religious foundations and teachings from a variety of religious perspectives teach me that somehow I've got to have empathy for the people on the other side of that hill that the army of Alexander the Great was moving over to slaughter and capture and use as slaves. Somehow I got to have empathy for that. Somehow I've got to allow myself to have empathy for the women that were burned for being women. I was reading a site, and it was a Catholic site, and it was about witchcraft. And they were making the case that we didn't burn 500,000. We only burned 500. And I was like, what is that? Whether that's true or not, I thought, well, if you burn 500, I think I'd learn to shut up. What do you want me to do? That somehow, 21st century, I read it, I just, and then I read this other term. Centers, there were cities, and they called them centers against women. Centers of the persecution of women. How am I to have empathy for those women, for those husbands who stood outside the courtroom and said, she was with me, she was not flying around on a broom, she was with me, and that have no meaning? Understanding that interrogation and torture was part of the process, not a result of punishment, part of the process. Understand it. How am I to have empathy for that woman who's being tortured to confess to a death sentence that would lead to a death sentence? For her children, for her husband, for the whole community, or the village. How am I to have empathy for those millions of young men in World War I that were led to the slaughter and trench warfare with gas warfare for some argument among unthinking patriarchal representatives. How am I to have empathy for the 100,000 to a million people that have been killed in Iraq? How am I to have empathy for the millions who have had to leave their home and leave their country? How am I to have empathy for the soldiers that are at war right now? How am I to really do that? My spiritual heritage compels me to do that. In the Christian tradition, many people view the communion not as a sacrament, but as an actual remembering of the crucifixion, of the trial, and the life of Jesus. That you actually step back in time and feel it and know it, not just something you do as being part of the community. Where do I get what it takes to take that triangle, patriarchy, the mother, and what it means to be human, and move through time and interpret history in a healthy way, which means cognitively and empathetically, and move that through time and allow that to get in me and help transform me to deal with my spirituality? I am suggesting today you cannot do that in isolation. That kind of spiritual work takes a community that knows that I'm doing that kind of spiritual work, that knows that you're doing that kind of spiritual work, that has a place where we can talk about it, to understand it, where it's okay for me to weep for my own history, but it's also okay for me to weep to 500 or 500 women that were burned at the stake. Because I know if I allow my empathy to be as pure as it can possibly be, I will weep at those historical events. How could I not? How could Mary not weep looking at her son? How could husbands and children not weep when the patriarchal powers represented in state and religious garb come into your town? This is a great truth, that there was a unified belief system that was about compassion and transformation and justice. And ever since 6000 BCE, whenever it was, we have been in a conflict that has been symbolized of good and evil, of hell and heaven. We have been in a conflict of greedy and oppressive and people simply trying to live their life. That's the conflict we've been in as human beings for at least 6,000 years. It's convenient to say we've only been existing for 6,000 years. That's the origin of that conflict, and how am I to think otherwise? To step back in time and to know that. How am I to understand that when legislation passes through our legislative process that denies people health care, I now need to understand that as kindness and generosity and the value system of compassion standing over and against the value system of patriarchy. That's how I need to understand that. When we have people in power positions that say we don't have enough money for you to eat, for you to be cared for, knowing full well that we do. I'm looking at that truth of the mother versus the greedy. I'm also suggesting that as Unitarian Universalists, that our history didn't begin at the Reformation. We don't find values of democracy and justice and peace and equity beginning at the Reformation. My sense is now that as a Unitarian Universalist, if I say we began here, I isolate us from the rest of history. There were people who carried the values that we as Unitarian Universalists claim. There were people that have carried those values from 20,000 BCE through time and have suffered and were killed and were murdered, but they still carried those values. We as Unitarian Universalists are in a community that helps carry those values through time that were birthed in that belief system of the mother. That's where the origins of our values come from. And to say that it begins at a particular point in time, do we diminish the sacrifice of those who went before us that actually carried those values through time to hand them to us? I say, yes, we do at that point. Our role is to gather the fragments of these value systems and religious traditions, which was what we do. I read them with the Buddhist and the Hindu and the Christian and the humanist is what we do. Our role is to recognize that those of our values and where they come from and hold them and mature them and nurture them and give a voice to them in the here and now, but also pass them on to the next generation. I think that's our calling as Unitarian Universalists in the 21st century, is to recognize that we are carriers of something sacred, and we are to enact on those, and we are to pass those on. And our lives need to be coordinated to that task.
I'd like to offer an opportunity for any brief comments or questions? Yes.
I've seen some awfully aggressive women liars.
Any others? Any?
That was my experience.
And that is my experience.
And that was.
Yeah.
I find it interesting to point out that we used to have this nurturing, caring society. That it can't compete with the patriarchal system. Is that Darwinian evolution that says that this will never be that?
Well, now if we begin to interpret history this way, the labor movement was this style of competition, depending how you interpret history. Because that went for a living wage, some time off to spend with the family, food to eat, a voice to speak about community. If you look at the Second Bill of Rights of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which does not get a lot of attention in our culture, if you go look that up, Second Bill of Rights, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you see the values of the mother in there. So when you listen to, I think, Dennis Kucinich, John Edwards, you hear people talking about positive. So I'm not so sure that we can't compete. I think what it about is we're comfortable enough not to be activated to put our voice in the community. That's what it's about. And I think our culture is getting uncomfortable. So it would be important for us to have our voice out in the community. Say this is where we stand. We can't compete if you have the perspective of patriarchy. Patriarchy will just assume you and make you part of it and motor right along. You have to really step out the best that we can. You can certainly patriarchy. The best that we can and identify what we can and do something to change the whole thing in a generation. But something. We're competing with it if we're really used to competing. And even that word competing may be patriarchal word. So language becomes important.
I could
maybe nurturing would be better.
Take one, one more in the, okay, two more. Pat, how do you do this?
I just wanted to be clear that when you refer to patriarchal, you mean male-dominated or men?
I mean a value system that normalizes oppression and greed and a sense of superiority for a particular group of people, which could be men or women. It can be both. If you read,
Charles Wonders.
No, in Isaiah, I'll find it for you. Maybe Amos, where the prophet, it's a patriarchal system that's being criticized by the prophet. He criticizes the women who are benefiting because they get to go shopping and buy everything in gold and silver from the patriarchal system. He not only criticizes the king and the royal religion, but he also criticizes the consumers that consume as opposed to share.
I'd like to
take
one, you, and then you quick. Thank you.
I wanted to make two comments. Firstly, I'm fully committed, so I certainly agree with the values that you state. I think, though, that it's in the service of truth to critique history. For example, I don't think that it's always true to glorify some past civilizations or current ones that are different just because, you know, they were overthrown or, you know, they were oppressed or whatever. I mean, one example would be the Native American culture. They have their own wars and their own acts of genocide, but they also had points of wisdom. And so I wanted to say, firstly, was that I really agree that we can draw a lot of good values from matriarchal and women-centered values, you know, like Catherine McKinnon writes a lot about that, some really good stuff. But, you know, I think maybe we can reform the best from both of these systems and to, you know, come with a third antithesis. And the second thing I wanted to say, if any of you are interested, there's a really good book called The Wicked Mystery by Raven Grimaldi. And it postulates the theory that the transition between matriarchal to patriarchal cult during the Neolithic period, right after the agricultural revolution, had to do with a lack of understanding of the male role within reproduction. And so that when men felt undervalued, they began to extrapolate on their sort of warrior role, and that arose into solar cults, which were parallel to the matriarchal cults. So that by the time of ancient Rome, there was a foundation existing for patriarchy.
Thank you. Larry?
Well, I guess using the term matriarchal and patriarchal, I mean, that describes an anthropology, how a society passes on family names.
And I try to be careful not to put patriarchy and matriarchy dancing together. I work at not doing that. Because they're not opposites, and I don't think we get that. But even when you pass the names down, there's a symbolic process of a value system that travels with it. And it is one way cultural systems are passed in time. And now that has meaning, and it's certainly more than we can do in 30 minutes, so we'll take it Saturday and actually have that.